Your name, please?
My name is Helen Gehagan Douglas.
And your occupation?
Well, my first occupation is as wife and mother and grandmother now. My husband is Melvin Douglas.
Mrs. Douglas, do you think that a woman today can successfully combine a career in marriage and raising a family?
My view is that a woman can, but she can only do so if she realizes that she is undertaking two kinds of lives at once.
This is Viewpoint, an unrehearsed and personal interview with another distinguished and well-known personality who will reveal to you, the American public, what he holds to be the responsibilities of his position in American life, produced by the Episcopal Church and brought to you as a public service by this station. Mr. Kennedy's guest today is Helen Gehagan Douglas, actress, wife of stage and screen star Melvin Douglas. A former congresswoman, Mrs. Douglas was defeated in a bitter campaign by Richard Nixon when she ran for Senator of California. Here is the moderator of the award-winning series Viewpoint, the Reverend Dana F. Kennedy, Executive Secretary, Division of Radio and Television for the National Council of the Protestant Episcopal Church. Mr. Kennedy.
Welcome to Viewpoint, Mrs. Douglas. Do you think that a woman today is considered as a first-class person, a real citizen, or do you think that they have rather a second place in our particular society?
If a woman approaches her work with men on the basis that she has to fight for her position because she's a woman, that she will never win through.
Well, why do so many women approach it on this basis? Or do they? I shouldn't load the question.
I don't think all women do, but I think women do who haven't probably been brought up in a family with brothers. For instance, all the battles I had with the male sex were carried on long before I was 20 years of age with my brothers. I had three brothers, fortunately, one sister, and a very strong father. And so the female-male battle was waged at a very early age in my house. So by the time I went out into the world, first as an actress and then into the political field later, I took men for granted, as it were, working with them for granted, and so I never thought of myself as inferior, nor did I feel I had to be belligerent in order to assert equality of opportunity or equality of recognition. I just did my job. Of course, a woman has to do her job very well if she's going to compete with men, because I think in the field of politics and the field of business and professions generally, that as a newcomer, the woman has to prove herself, and therefore she has to work extra hard.
Going on just a little, Mrs. Douglas, do you think that today people are encouraged to be individuals, to really think and to feel for themselves,
no,
to trust their own instincts?
No, I don't. I think everything is against it.
Why should this be?
I think the way our production line is set up, which necessitates the selling of the goods we produce in order to keep the economy going, has put such an emphasis on material well-being in our society in the last 50 years, really it's the last 30 years, that it's kind of thrown things out of kilter. People feel, well, if they have a certain kind of house that they live in, or a car, or certain appurtenances, that this gives them standing. Well, there's nothing gives anybody standing but what's inside of them.
Of your two careers, politics and the theater, which did you feel happier in?
Well, you can't really compare them. There were very unhappy moments in the theater because one is never satisfied with one's performance. I know the most unhappy nights in the theater were always, for me, the night that a play opened, because I always felt, oh, I could have done it so much better. And then one works all the time, and there's that effort to perfect oneself, and there's a lot of pain in that. But there were many rewards in being in the theater. I led a much quieter life, and this I missed in politics. I missed not having time to study, as much time to study as I needed. I did take the time to study, because you just can't do a job in Congress unless you do. But one is beset by people, and that pulling in nine directions at once I found very wearing, and I had to really discipline myself to withstand it and not to have it pull me down. Then, of course, the long speeches on the floor of the House, I didn't have to listen to all those. You could get up and walk out. but some of them were brilliant and some were very boring. And it was pretty tiresome. So I don't think you can compare them. The Congress gave me a very rich experience. I wouldn't give it up for it. I wouldn't give it up for anything.
Do you find, Mrs. Douglas, that in your estimation, politics is really as, what would we say, as dirty as it's sometimes alleged that it is?
Well, when we think of the size of this country, the different kinds of people that we have in this country, and the pressures and the strains, it's remarkably free from dirtiness. There is dirtiness there. But what is heartening and what makes the system work and keeps inspiring good and noble people to go into politics is the fact that it can be so noble. That is quite remarkable. I mean, all kinds of heroic resistances to pressure and devotion to work are written every day on the record, but they're not publicized. One doesn't see them, you see.
I take it then that you're not at all delusioned about politics.
No, goodness, no.
It must be a very lonely business, though, making decisions. You say you're pulled on all sides by so many people. You can't represent everybody in the sense of doing what they want you to, can you?
No,
and
the
How
the,
do you represent them,
well,
then?
Well, one does see in the legislatures and in the Congress men who are afraid to lose their seat. And maybe this is, you know, they have no other form of income at all. Great many haven't. And that they have children, and they're afraid to lose. And so... An issue will come up that's unpopular, but the representative knows that this should be voted, that this measure should be voted for. The administration's asked for it, and then the people begin to write from back home and warn them: if you do this, you won't go back again. And then the tug begins. And if that person begins to answer these pressure groups and try to please everyone, they're destroyed as representative. And I know, you know, when I was defeated for the Senate. People said to me, well, you're going to run again. I said, this is a big country. We've got an awful lot of folks here. And our system is a democratic system. And the theory is that there are many, many millions of people qualified to go to the Congress. But it doesn't mean that, you know, Hong Kong Douglas is the only person that can be in the Congress. I really feel this so strongly. But then I must quickly say that it was not for me bread and butter. You see, I could afford to be. So I don't say that I had the same pressure as somebody else. I never thought of pressure groups. I thought of finding what was the best course, and that's hard enough, you know, without these other calculations, personal calculations. I was tortured many a time.
And, I suppose the truth of the matter is, there's no perfect course many times.
No perfect course, but to find the better course.
Yes.
Is very difficult, and now and then the question is very torturous one that you put to yourself. And it's hard enough speaking the truth.
Do you think that the chap who has the job in Congress and wants to stay there because of financial reasons and family and all, do you think he has to compromise his principles from time to time in order to be successful and to stay there?
Of course, that's hard to put to me, because I can't see voting one way if you know you should vote another. It's just I just think it's wrong.
Do you think that a representative would do better to vote the way he really believes and get out if necessary?
Yes, of course, and go sell dry goods.
I wonder if it isn't this very thing that keeps a good many good people from getting into politics.
I don't think so.
You
know, Father, no. I think that what prevents people from getting in politics is the difficulty of getting elected. They don't know how to go about it. And if they've never done it, you know, it's just something so foreign to them. And I think that's something that with which we must concern ourselves, is that with this growing population, we have to educate our young people as to the way our democracy works, or there are going to be fewer and fewer people who run the party machinery.
You mean that when, the vote comes for president, you don't really have a choice of people you'd like?
No.
Well, I think that a good many people feel that way, I'm sure. Mrs. Douglas, are you yourself personally through with politics?
No, I'm not. I'm not holding any office at the moment, and I'm not. I don't expect to run for an office in the immediate future. But I've lived long enough not to make any long-range promises. It might be that in the future, conditions might be such that I felt I could make a peculiar contribution, as I did when I went to Congress. Melvin was overseas. He didn't know I was running for Congress. He read it in his Army newspaper. And President Roosevelt wanted me to run. The dean of the delegation was retiring, and they needed the support for his program preparedness. And so I went to Congress. If a situation developed again where I felt that I could be helpful and that I needed to make that contribution, I would do so. It's a question of making a contribution in the society we live in an age that's moving so fast.
Do you think that the churches should take stands on political issues, Mrs. Douglas?
I think some political issues they should, not indiscriminately perhaps. But there are certain political issues I would think that the churches should
take a stand on occasionally.
Definitely.
Do you think there's anything more that the churches can, should, have done in the matter of politics than taking stands on issues? Is there any particular contribution which the churches should make in this matter of politics?
Well, I think only the contribution that they, I think the contribution the churches make is fundamental in helping to form character and establish moral principles that people live by. I just don't know how anyone can stay afloat, or float isn't the way, but stand on their feet with the pulls and tugs of public life unless they have some standards they live by.
Do you think
beliefs that motivate them in crucial moments. Crucial moments, you can't figure what's the safe course. You have to figure only what's the right course. And in order to not be in control of yourself and your mind and your emotions, you have to have some standards, some yardsticks to know what the right course is.
That's certainly very true. I've wondered whether you feel that on the whole, people today do have this kind of an outlook that you've just expressed.
Not enough. That's why I think that the emphasis on material things, THINGS, has pulled us out of shape. I went back the other day to Ohio, where the Gehagans were pioneers, and saw some of the places were built in 1780 and 90. And even today, you have the pattern of what was true. My grandmother's day, when I went back there to visit her, and my father was brought up there. That was what a man is that will give him the respect of his community, not what he has, what he is. And there just isn't enough emphasis placed on this, because we turn out these things in the factories. We've got to sell them in order for people to keep working. I mean, and this is good, but we yet haven't learned to live with it. We've got to reestablish that what a man is the yardstick that will determine his place in the community.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Melvin Douglas, for being with us and for giving us your viewpoint.
Thank you.
This has been Viewpoint, an unrehearsed personal interview with another distinguished and well-known personality, produced as a public service by the Division of Radio and Television of the Protestant Episcopal Church. Today's guest was Helen Gehagan Douglas, actress, wife of stage and screen star Melvin Douglas, and a former congresswoman.